We continue to look at the craziness that was the draft lottery on Friday with our next guest, a Monday regular here on the program. It is Ryan Pike from Flames Nation. Ryan, that was fun on Friday. What's your reaction to a long-suffering Team E finally getting a break?
Well, it has a different, let's be honest, we're all like sports fiends, so we would have been watching the qualifying round or whatever the league's calling it with bated breath anyway. But now it's like, okay, if you're the Flames, you go through a hard-fought series with Winnipeg, and if somehow you don't come out ahead, you have a 1-in-8 chance at a transformative player. That's not a bad consolation. On the other hand, I mean, Detroit was lousy this year. We've all seen enough bad teams in the NHL to know what the difference between a team that's, you know, entertaining bad, like Ottawa, and a team that's just cringe bad, like Detroit. Detroit was bad by bad team standards this year, and they'll draft fourth. That's an extra kick in the stomach for a fan base that really did not have a lot to cheer for this year.
Yeah, the Wings scored 2 goals a game and almost gave up 4 a game. Like, that is just unprecedented levels of bad. If any team needed a first overall pick, it was the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah, and now they're, it's not a bad draft. At 4th overall, you're going to get somebody pretty good. Same with Ottawa. Ottawa was also not particularly good, and they all draft 3rd and 5th. They're going to get 2 pretty good players. So, you know, as much as one of those two teams, you want to feel bad for them, and you do feel bad for them. It's a good draft year, so it's not like they're losing out on someone. But on the other hand, a team that's pretty good is going to get Alexis Lafreniere, and, you know, it'll be weird because this is a very 2020 type of outcome, because it's been a weird year on a lot of fronts in a lot of different ways. And this just seems to be the most 2020-est result that the draft lottery possibly could have had.
Yeah, anyone who thought we were getting a standard draft lottery in 2020 is out of their damn mind with everything that's gone on. And specifically from a Flames perspective, it's been a weird season. And now it comes down to a best of 5 against the Winnipeg Jets. But there's a safety net at the end that you might potentially get the first overall pick. You'll have a 12.5% chance if things don't go your way against the Winnipeg Jets. From a Flames perspective, does this change how you view that series with the Jets at all?
No, I think, to be honest, it was always kind of a toss-up. I mean, on one hand, the Jets have Connor Hellebuyck, and he has the capability to steal a series. He was one of, if not the best goaltender in the National Hockey League this year, and, you know, he'll be off like everyone else for about 3.5-4 months when live bullets start firing again. So we don't know how that'll impact him. On the other hand, you know, David Riddick wasn't any great shakes, but we found out that, you know, he was dealing with an elbow injury down the stretch. So he and everyone else wearing red will be, you know, back to 100% or close to it by the time they get back playing. So it's going to be really interesting. I think on paper, the Jets have the edge in goal. The Flames have the edge on the blue line. And then, you know, it's sort of a toss-up in terms of forward group. So a lot of it will depend on who gets up to speed. And, you know, it's going to be super weird because, you know, we don't really know what to expect because it's entirely based on, you know, the peculiarities of individual players or lines or groups of players in each team to determine who's going to get, you know, their engine revved up faster.
Yeah, and again, the heartbreak of defeat is lessened by having a 12.5-point chance at getting the first overall pick. Like, I can't wrap my head around what that's going to be like, where a team lose. Like, there's going to be a franchise and a fan base anyway that sees their team have their Stanley Cup playoffs hopes dashed in front of them and is kind of stoked because they have a 12.5% chance of getting the first overall pick. Like, it's just going to be so weird.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, like, we keep hearing from folks like Pierre LeBrun and Bob McKenzie and Elliot Friedman, all the usual suspects, that it appears that we're closing in on what could be a 6-year extension to the CBA. There's 2 years left in the current CBA, and then there'll be 4 years added potentially. One of the wrinkles is there's probably going to be a flat salary cap for the next 2 years. So if you're a team like, say, let's just say Calgary, if you're a team like Calgary, all of a sudden you get a player who can come in at $925,000, the rookie maximum, and, you know, play in your top six. All of a sudden, like, that's, if you're getting 3 years of a guy who can be top six winger good, right away in a situation where there's a flat cap and everybody's scrambling to get everyone under the ceiling, that's a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous strategic advantage. So not only is it just sort of a, you know, on one hand, it's a rich get richer kind of thing, because some team who's already pretty good, like Calgary already has Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk and Elias Lindholm and, you know, Mangiapane, they don't have enough, they have enough good wingers that Sam Bennett is playing on the fourth line because, you know, they have six wingers who were playing better than him when the season got paused. That's pretty good. You throw in a Lafreniere into that, and all of a sudden, you know, we very rarely get to see, you know, Drew Living smile during press conferences because he's a hell of a poker player. Even he might start giggling if they come to him and say, so Brad, we got your draft prep all figured out. I mean, I feel bad. If that happens, I feel bad for, you know, people like us and Pat, because, you know, what are we going to talk about for 2 months, for 3 months until the draft comes in October? We're going to sit around going, so any chance that Quentin Byfield goes one, or do they just go with Lafreniere? I mean, our work's going to get much easier, but much more boring.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it from a selfish standpoint of what we would talk about if the Flames just had the first overall pick and we knew that. Maybe might be changing my tune on that a little bit. I threw out the question before of if people, like, did this change fans' perspective? And I was expecting to be called an idiot. No, you always go for the win and banners fly forever and those sorts of things. There were quite a few people texting in saying, look, I think if we beat the Jets, we get steamrolled in the next round anyway. So let's just get a chance at this first overall pick and go for it. Is there a point where, look, every team going into this thing is going to try to win 110% all the way. That if you don't have that mentality, you're not coming out of quarantine to go play in Vegas or Edmonton or wherever you're going. But is there, like, if the Flames go out, beat the Jets, and then lose to the Blues in the first round, I suppose, you kind of almost wish you had the pick, right? Like, is there a point where it was more worth it to just lose to the Jets, I guess?
Yeah, and I think the big balancing act is, what do you, you know, in terms of this group, you know, they're the best players in this team outside of Mark Giordano, who's a unicorn, are still pretty damn young. I mean, you know, the starting goaltender is just turning 27. So relative to the rest of the league and relative to a lot of other teams, the Flames are very young and they have some core guys, like, you know, I think Rasmus Anderson's going to be a special player, and you have Mangiapane and Dubé coming through who will probably be pushing for top 6 minutes, if not next season, the season after. So I think the big question is, A, do you think this group can go and make some noise and grow from making some noise, even if they don't win against St. Louis or whoever they play in the second round, or I guess the first round technically, but will they learn from that? On the other hand, you know, do you learn more about the group by sort of, you know, losing a tough series to Winnipeg? I mean, whatever happens, I think if they lose, I think everyone's hoping they don't lose in five, because if you lose in five, at least, you know, you've gotten some progress out of it. If you lose in three, well, probably some bad stuff happened and you need to, you know, go back to the drawing board. But I think the biggest question is just what outcome pushes the core group further or teaches you more about the core group? Because, you know, we had the experience last year where, you know, if you had asked Flames fans, hey, do you want to have the best regular season in 30 years and then just trip over your own feet in five games in the first round and a few games that were not close, I think they go, oh God, those are my choices. They have to fall on their face. And if they learn something from falling on their face, then I think you're like, okay, I guess that's sort of the, you know, that's the eating your vegetables, you know, approach to, well, I guess we have to, but in this case, can they learn something from whatever happens in the next, you know, few weeks, few months, that'll make the team more of a contender for the 2, 3, 4 seasons following it.
Chatting with Ryan Pike from Flames Nation here on a Pinder and Steinberg less edition of Pinder and Steinberg. It's Peter Klein and Logan Gordon.
Hey, Pike. How are you, buddy?
I'm excellent, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. Last time we chatted, we were busy redrafting, or not redrafting, but going through the best Flames lineup of their drafted players, so we didn't get a chance to dive into the arena news that we got not too long ago that includes some designers that have been part of some major projects in North America, including Little Caesars Arena in Detroit and the Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the Falcons in Atlanta. Give us a heads up of the news that we got about the new home of the Flames.
Well, the new home of the Flames, it will be an arena that holds events that are mostly sporting games, so we'll call it an arena for shorthand. but essentially, the main group is called HOK. They're based in Kansas City and St. Louis. They have a couple offices. Their big thing is, they do a lot of arenas. They've done a lot of college arenas, but the last few years they've really specialized in, you know, hockey and basketball arenas. They did Nationwide Arena in Columbus, which is gorgeous. They did Stockton Arena in Stockton, which is small but well built. If anyone's really curious, the places to really get a handle on HOK, Nationwide Arena in Columbus, the Spirit Center in Kansas City, where the Flames ECHL affiliate plays, Rogers Place in Edmonton, and Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. Those are their four, their bread and butter arenas. So we're looking at four buildings with deep seats, compact places to watch games, and the idea is they want to sort of, part of the push is these guys are doing a lot of sort of compact buildings that don't have a large amount of footprint because, they want to be able to fit in a nice public plaza and stuff and potentially a practice rink. And then the other thing is, I think if you look at some of the other arenas, like T-Mobile Arena, which was done by Populous in Las Vegas, it's a little bit more spread out than a lot of the other arenas. Rogers Place, relative to other HOK designs, is a little bit spread out too. You always hear the jokes from broadcasters that you sort of need to get out your opera glasses to see the ice from how far away the press box is. And the press box is directly above the cheap seats in Rogers Place. So you kind of want to have, I think they want to have something a little bit more compact, but, really modern designs, a lot of glass, a lot of, wide open natural light. And their partner actually is a local group, Dialogue. And they were the group that did a lot of the design work on the Central Library. So, again, sort of same kind of idea, sort of, lots of windows, lots of bright light, lots of sort of, big plazas. And I think they want to build something that is, kind of striking. The cool thing is, as someone who A, likes cool buildings, and B, spends a lot of time in that part of downtown in Victoria Park, this is going to be the last thing built in a span that included the Central Library and the National Music Center just down the street. And then across the street from the arena is going to be the BMO Center expansion. And by expansion, I mean, they're pretty much going to redo 2/3 of the building, and the exterior is going to be almost entirely new. So it's going to be surrounded by cool looking buildings. So there's a standard sort of set for the area of this is how cool your building needs to look in order to hang out in this neighborhood. So the bar has been set. The BMO Center designs are pretty cool and pretty striking. So we'll see what they come up with. We should be hopefully getting some renderings closer to the end of the year in terms of, some ideas and some specs in terms of what the building could look like. But hopefully it's cool. As soon as they announced it, I'm like, oh, finally. And then, oh, man, this is going to be cool because, most of HOK's designs have been pretty cool.
And correct me if I'm wrong, we got an idea on date, a sort of late spring 2024 for completion, which would mean a 2024-2025 NHL season would be the first for the Flames in the new building?
Yeah, I think last time we spoke with CMLC, the group that's handling all the construction and design and everything, they said, I believe it's end of summer 2021, so basically a year from now, basically after Stampede a year from now, they'll be doing the groundbreaking and, actually starting to build. And then the turnover of the building to the Flames is supposed to be around May of 2024. And then in theory, they'd have, a summer of concerts and all kinds of different things just to, get the kinks out of the system before the hockey season starts. But the intention is to be ready for opening night of the 2024-2025 season. But the nice thing is with the time scale they've built into it, they have about 3.5 months of buffer. They're hoping they won't need to use the 3.5 months of buffer because, let's be honest, I'm pretty sure we all want to go check out that building during the Stampede in 2024. And I'm pretty sure that the designers in the city want to get people into the building and at that point too, to sort of, you know, get some traffic through and sort of get a sense of how it's actually going to work.
And switching focus now a bit to the more current edition of the Flames, we had an interesting, not interesting that we heard from Brad Treliving on Friday. He's been doing pretty regular conference calls with the media, but interesting in the sense that Brad was pretty open about a number of things, including some players that we're going to see join the team for what we're looking at training camp in a couple of weeks here. He gave a long list of players there. I'm sure you were on the call listening in. Any of those names that he mentioned that'll be part of training camp with the Flames catch you by surprise, or anybody really intrigue you of the list of guys that are going to join the Flames?
Well, there's two. One guy who's eligible to play and one guy who isn't. The gentleman who's not eligible to play because he signed after the trade deadline is Connor Mackey, who was the Flames' big collegiate signing in the spring. They were after him for a while, the better part of a year, and they ended up getting him. And it says a lot in terms of how close they think he is to being an NHL player, because, you know, if you think, you know, here's an example, like Jacob Pelche, the Flames' first-round pick from last year, he is not coming to camp because they have a ton of bodies there already, and, you know, he might not be close enough. He, you know, he's still playing in junior. Connor Mackey will be playing pro hockey next year, and they want to see how close he is. And so that's going to be pretty exciting for him. It kind of stinks that he can't play, but, you know, for him, it'll be a really cool learning experience just coming here and playing, you know, practicing with the likes of Mark Giordano and Rasmus Anderson to sort of get a sense of how close he is. The other player that I was pretty excited to see on that list is Adam Rzeczka, who is a draft pick for the Flames a few years ago, I believe in 2017, from the OHL. He just completed his first year pro. He played with Stockton. He had basically had two seasons. His first half of the season was sort of being a young guy trying to wrap his head around how to play pro hockey and sort of the differences, you know, the systems, the minutiae of the pro game. But in the second half of the season, especially the last 2 months of the season, he was one of Stockton's best players. He'll be the youngest guy in camp. He's only 21. He just turned 21 years old, so he's super young, and he's big, and he can skate, and he can shoot, and he can sort of play the wing or play center. So he's a guy that they're pretty excited about, because, you know, he was a fourth round pick, and the Flames seem to be good at finding gems in the fourth round. But he's also a guy that, you know, has just sort of been working in the background on, you know, improving his game to the point where, you know, he was probably Stockton's second or third best player in the last month of the season when they were pushing for a playoff spot and a division lead. So, Mackey and Rzeczka are probably the two most exciting prospects to keep your eye on. And then, of course, you know, the usual guys. I mean, you know, it'd be cool to see, you know, Glenn Gaudner, Matthew Phillips get into a game or two, because those guys were very, very good for Stockton. But the surprises, I'd say, were Mackey and Rzeczka.
And Brad, another thing that Trilling mentioned during that conference call, he said that his understanding is that if Yusuf Alamaki does not play this season, he'd be exempt from the Seattle expansion draft. I've kind of, you know, ballied about the fact that maybe this winds up being a silver lining for the Flames through this injury with Valimaki. I know that you never want a long injury history, but a chance to maybe not have to put a piece of your future with a protected slot when Seattle winds up doing their expansion draft might wind up being a good thing for them. Where do you stand on that? And is it you? Do you have the same sort of understanding as Treliving going forward, that if he doesn't play this season, he's not going to have to worry about the expansion draft?
Yeah, from talking to folks at the league, believe the term that the league is using is 2 years of pro experience. If you've completed 3 years of pro, by the expansion draft, you need to be protected or exposed. And if you've only completed 2 years, then you are exempt. So in the case of Valimaki, if he plays this year at all, regular season, playoff, any kind of game, any level of pro hockey, it would count. Thankfully for him, the AHL season is kaput. So it's either NHL games or no games at all for him. And, you know, if you look at the Flames roster, they had some injuries in the blue line before the trade deadline. So they added Derek Forbort and Eric Gustafson, and they have, you know, Michael Stone there, who's healthy and has experience, and, you know, Oliver Shillington, who is an extra body during the last little bit. And they have Alexander Yellison. I mean, they have a lot of guys who I think they know where they're at and they know what the risks and positives are of using them. With Malinacki, I just think, you know, if you think he's as good as you think he's going to be, you want to protect him as much as you can. I mean, it sucks. He's going to lose a year of development, and you don't know how that's going to impact him long term. On the other hand, you know, he's coming off a pretty significant injury. I believe he's about 10 months out of his surgery, and, you know, he was just starting to ramp up his skating when the season got paused. So I think they're going to treat him with kid gloves, and they should, because, you know, he's one of a handful of guys who are going to be really important for the team. And, you know, let's be honest, long term, you know, Mark Giordano is 36 years old. He'll probably only play till he's 105 or something, or 40, whatever, one or the other. But, you know, he's not ageless. And I think between Noah Hanifin and Yusuf Alamaki, it's going to be up to one of those guys to really take the reins. And if you think Alamaki is the type of player who can be Giordano good or a reasonable facsimile, I think you want to play the long game with him.
And last one from me, Ryan. It was interesting over the weekend. You're our CBA guy, and a lot of stuff of the minutia and that sort of stuff, we kind of go to you and lean towards some of your expertise in the area. A story came up from ESPN writer Greg Wyshynski that the NHL and the Players Association, throughout all this massive COVID and return to play talks, I've actually come quite close to signing a new CBA. Some of the basic details there, it sounds like a six-year deal. Interesting here, as we heard Artemi Panarin last week mention escrow, we hear that it would be capped for the first two seasons of this agreement at 20%, I believe, and we'd also see a salary cap frozen for the next couple of years. It sounded like from his reporting that this was a deal that was pretty close, if not imminent. What did you make of the story? Do you think that we're close to a deal here? I know we're so used to these two sides arguing, but wouldn't it be something if throughout all this COVID chaos, they actually found some labor peace over the next few years?
It sounds like they'll probably be voting on a CBA extension at about the same time they vote on the return to play stuff. And I think one definitely feeds into the other one. You know, it's been a very combative relationship for the last, you know, for many years between the NHL and the NHLPA. And I think, you know, the situation we're in now has sort of forced them to act more as active partners with each other, which has been, you know, I think pretty healthy. I think, you know, forces everyone to sort of take the longer term approach to things. The big sticking point right now is the reason we have such escrow problems is because the CBA sets player compensation at 50% of league revenues. So what happens is you have to wait until you confirm the league's revenue, and that takes a year or two. So in the interim, the league holds on to a portion of each player's paycheck and then pays them out in a year or two when they actually know what the revenue is. So if you're, say, Matthew Tkachuk, and you have a $7 million contract that you've negotiated and you've earned through your play, you might not be getting $7 million. And if I had signed a contract and then I was only getting like 70% of my money before taxes, I'd be kind of grumpy about it. So I, you know, it makes sense. And it sounds like they'll be at least temporarily unlinking league revenues and player compensation for a few years to address the escrow problem. And then theoretically, as league revenues grow, they'll bring the linkages back together closer to the end of things to sort of mix things up. But with, you know, there's going to be no fans in the stands this year. We don't know what it's going to look like for the 2021 season. So I think it makes a lot of sense to be flexible from a league perspective and the player perspective in terms of, you know, the philosophy of your 50-50 partners financially and otherwise makes a lot of sense. In the interim, the short term, the financial aspect of it might not be making a lot of sense because it's a bit challenging. And, you know, if you're players and you might have a certain amount of frustration with how the league has treated you as an individual or as a group in the last 20, 25 years, you know, I think delinking things and making sure the players get more of the money they've been promised is a nice way to sort of dangle an olive branch towards the players and to make them feel like they're actually valued.
And I lied. I said that was my last one for you, but it's not. We're actually days away from what would be the traditional start of free agency, which is Wednesday, July 1st. Does the return to play vote have to happen before then so that they can extend contracts until the end of return to play, or what are we looking at for that? Because I know that there's a number of signing bonuses for teams that usually happen on that July 1st, correct?
Yes, correct. I believe the Flames are on the hook right now for about $13 million in signing bonuses. That is one of the things that's sort of a time crunch, just determining that particular aspect of it. But on the other hand, you know, if you know, a lot of the any player who has an expiring deal has had the deal, I believe, extended to the end of October. Existing contracts aren't impacted, so you know, Johnny Gaudreau's contract obviously won't roll, so it doesn't make a difference to him. But for expiring contracts, they've dealt with that. But little things like that, the logistics of what happens with you know, other personnel contracts, what happens with bonuses. And even, you know, the last NHL paycheck, I mean, the players haven't cashed that last paycheck from the end of the regular season because, you know, there was some concern about how that would impact their escrow payments going forward. So right now that's sort of sitting in the mailbox. And I believe part of the return to play negotiations is them figuring out, do they cash the checks? Do they not cash the checks? Do they give the money back and deal with it later? And the same thing's going on with the bonuses, where a lot of that stuff will be dealt with probably this week, potentially in the next couple of days, just because they want to get everything done and sort of settled away before July 1st, if they can.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah, lots of little things still in there yet to be determined. Return of Ryan Pike, our Monday regular from Flames Nation, Logan Gordon and Peter Klein. PK, got anything left for Mr. Pike there?
Just a follow-up. They get paychecks? I assume we called them paycheck. I just assume it'd be like a direct deposit by now. It's still physical checks in the mail?
My understanding is they actually, these guys do get physical checks.
Huh.
I'd love to have a check with like 8 zeros on it.
Yeah.
That'd be so much fun.
The problem would be for us, that's all that would be on it. I mean, I always learn a lot when we chat with Pike, but that was... That one's wrinkling my brain a little bit. Pike, while I wrap my head around that, what's still to come at Flames Nation?
Well, we did a little look at what HOK's been up to over the weekend, and we also did a profile of a very unique player, Brennan Evans, who's, you know, he played in the Stanley Cup playoffs in 2004 with the Calgary Flames, and that was the only games he ever played in the National Hockey League.
Huh.
Hmm.
Love stories.
This is a name I never thought I'd hear again.
Yeah. All right, Pike, this was awesome, man. Thanks for doing this today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
Take care, guys.